Minnville, Oregon. This is Crisscrossing Science, the podcast that knows which way the wind blows and why. I'm Michael Crosser. Next to me is Chad Tilburg. And today's title is, By Jove, It's Weather. Hey, Chad.
Good afternoon, Michael.
And how are things in your neck of the woods?
Hot.
Hot, yes.
Yes, it's been a hot week.
That's a good description of it, yeah. I had to go do research out at the coast yesterday. Just to get away.
Did you?
I told my students I was doing field research somewhere.
And do you have some data turn into them?
I did not show them any data. Anyway, so right now, Jupiter is high in the sky at night.
At night, yeah.
At night. And so people can actually see it. And it's actually one of the better planets to look at through a telescope.
Yeah.
It's one of the more interesting ones. But Jupiter is cool because you can see these bands of color, different color going around the equator. And sometimes you can see this big red spot on there.
Right.
The big red eye of Jupiter. And you can also see four moons pretty easily that are orbiting around it.
Yeah.
Which are the same moons that Galileo Galilei first saw.
Heard of them.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they are named after him. They're called the Galilean moons. Because even with kind of a crappy telescope, you can see those four moons there.
Yeah. So I have a telescope myself.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I have yet to take it out and look at Jupiter, but I've been meaning to. It's been just a little bit hazy in the evenings, and then I fall asleep, and next thing I know, it's the morning. But maybe one of these nights coming up soon, I'm hoping to do this.
You've got a pretty good telescope, if I remember.
Yeah, yeah, I do. My wife got me one for Christmas a few years ago. And yeah, it's a pretty good telescope. And in looking at it, I can pretty clearly see that banding pattern you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And you can see the big red eye spot. And that kind of got me to wondering about what's up with those stripes and that big red eye spot.
So we decided we're going to do an episode all about that.
Let's do it.
In order to get to that, we'll actually have to talk quite a bit about weather patterns on Earth as well. Because a lot of this has exactly the same reasonings that we have certain weather happening on Earth as what's happening on Jupiter. So the first thing I think we should talk about is how what happens with hot air versus cold air. So when you heat up air, the air itself tends to expand outward. Right. Like I remember actually doing this experiment in like elementary school where I put a balloon on an empty pop bottle or something and heated up the air inside of it and watched the balloon expand out just because at higher temperature it expanded outward. And so here on Earth, the main mechanism for that is actually the sun. The sun is shining on the Earth and it's heating up the air. And so the air that is heating up is expanding outward and pushing out other gases away from it.
Yeah. So it becomes less dense.
It becomes less dense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are two effects. Number one, it's just pushing other gases away. And the second part is that hot air rises, right? So like if you have a space heater or something in your room, you can have it in the corner and hot air will come from there and it'll kind of circulate around. As it leaves, then it will push colder air down below it to return and get heated up by the heat source and then have a whole circulation going on.
Yeah. So here on Earth, the place where this is happening in the most pronounced way is going to be the equator.
Yes. And it gets a little bit complicated more so on here on Earth is because we've got an extra tilt, so we've got more seasons going on. But yeah, generally speaking, the sun is heating up the equator the most. And so air will be pushed both north and south from the equator, essentially.
Well, it rises first, right?
It'll rise first.
Yeah.
But then kind of push outward towards the poles.
Right.
In both directions.
High, like it hits the top of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then it kind of spreads north and south.
Correct. Yeah.
So this is like way up there. This is like higher than airplanes fly.
It's around where airplanes are flying, actually.
Okay.
So the atmosphere technically goes, it extends really, really far, like 100 kilometers or so above the Earth. But basically where the weather, where planes fly is around like 40 to 50 kilometers above.
Okay.
I think. Just kind of ballpark numbers here. But yeah, most of the, just about everything that we think about with weather and all that is happening relatively low to the ground. All this stuff. But yeah, so this gas will be pulled up because it's heated and it will tend to go up in the atmosphere and tend to go towards either of the poles.
Right.
Now, there's an added complication here, though, because the Earth is rotating around. It's spinning. Just like Jupiter does, actually.
Yeah.
You know, and so Earth spins around. It takes about 24 hours for the Earth to go all the way around. That's what we call a day.
Indeed.
For those of you keeping track at home.
Yeah.
So if you're filling in the crossword puzzle for episode 79 or whatever episode this is, available now at Amazon stores, the answer is day. Yes. Okay. So, but Jupiter, it goes all the way around every like 10 hours or so.
Huh. That's fast. Okay, but so let's complete the circle for this air that is rising near the equator. So it rises, it either heads north or south, and then at a certain point, it's going to come back down towards the surface of the Earth.
Correct.
And that tends to happen at 30 degrees north and south latitudes, right?
Yeah, so there are two factors going on. Number one, the atmosphere is relatively low, so it's sort of like it's hitting a ceiling. Mm-hmm. Where this air can go. And so you can imagine, like, ideally, if you were to complete a loop, you might have like a circle or a square, something like even sides, right?
Okay.
But basically, the distance it wants to travel is really long, but it doesn't have as much space to go up.
Got it.
Right. And so that's one issue. So it's kind of forcing it to crash back down sooner than it would. So this description that I just gave you, you might think, like, okay, so I've got air going from the equator, going all the way up to the poles, and then returning back. Mm. And it doesn't actually do that. It breaks up here on Earth. It breaks up at about 30 degrees and 60 degrees into a couple of different what are called cells.
Right.
In addition to that, there's another effect that we need to talk through.
Okay.
Which is, so the Earth is rotating once per 24 hours.
Yeah.
However, that's the angular rotation. All right. If you're actually standing on Earth, it depends where you are as far as like how fast you're actually moving.
Right.
Right. Because think of, so kids, you won't know what I'm talking about here, but the rest of us, there's something called a record player from our youth.
Uh-huh.
You know, so think of a record player that, like, if you're near the middle, the entire record is spinning around at the same angular rate, but things near the middle are not moving nearly as fast as things on the far edge of the record.
Right. So if you were to trace the circle made by somebody standing near the middle of the record player.
It's a small circle.
It's a much smaller circle. But the amount of time it makes them to complete one revolution is the same as for somebody who's standing out on the periphery.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And so in that same amount of time, the circle that their journey traces is much, much larger.
Correct.
So on a distance per unit time basis, the person who is on the periphery is moving with a much faster momentum.
Yes.
And so to tie this back to the Earth, that person on the widest part of the record, that's the person at the equator.
Correct.
That's the widest part of the Earth.
Yeah, and if you're up near the poles, you're barely moving at all.
Right.
You know, in theory, if you were standing right on the pole, you're just kind of spinning around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we are at about 45 north.
Correct.
Here in McMinnville.
Yeah, and so at about McMinnville, we are traveling, if you do the math, about 800 miles per hour.
Okay.
But if we move down to, say, the equator, we'd be going over 1,000 miles per hour.
Right. And it's not just us, but it's us and all of the air, the atmosphere that's going along for the ride.
Correct.
Right.
Everything is moving the same way in that
regard. It's all moving along with us.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So we got that down so that we're all traveling angular-wise the same, but at the equator, you're moving like 200 miles per hour faster than you are up here in Oregon. So let's say that you wanted to launch a rocket from the equator due directly south from Oregon towards Oregon.
So right? we're standing on the equator.
Yeah.
And we're going to fire a projectile, a rocket.
Directly north.
Directly north. We want to hit Oregon.
Yeah.
Okay. And so if you were to point it directly north at Oregon, you would miss.
You would miss, yeah, because it has this speed already built in, which is about 200 miles per hour faster going east than what we are doing up here at Oregon.
Yeah, it's got that angular velocity.
Correct.
Of the equator.
And so if you add to it, just go straight north, relatively, once it reaches Oregon, it would be going 200 miles per hour faster to the east.
Yeah.
And so if you watched this rocket go, you would say, oh my goodness, it curved towards the east as I fired it up there.
Yeah. And that's because the ground that it is passing over is going slower and slower and slower relative to its own angular momentum.
Correct.
Which it retains from the point at which it was launched.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Okay. Yeah, good way to describe it.
Okay.
By the way, this is something called the Coriolis effect.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens going the other direction.
So if you returned fire from your cannon in Oregon.
Yeah, and we shot it direct south.
Uh-huh.
Its ground relative speed compared to the equator is going about 200 miles per hour slower.
Uh-huh.
And so when I shoot it south, the ground near the equator is passing it by.
Uh-huh.
And so from our vantage point, if we had some satellite watching this whole battle happen,
uh-huh,
we would say that the southward one going would actually curve to the west on its way down.
Yeah, because it's losing ground.
Yeah.
The ground that it's passing over is moving progressively faster relative to the projectile.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we get some rotation built in
yeah.
just from all that.
Yeah. So this has, I mean, you know, this has obvious military implications, right? Like if you're,
yeah.
if you're launching shells at somebody who's directly east or west, you don't need to account for this. But if you're crossing lines of latitude,
yes,
you do, because either you're going to overshoot them or, I mean, you'll be off either to the east or to the west.
Correct.
Depending yeah. on if you're firing north or south.
And this is something that they train people yeah. to pay attention to and think
yeah.
about. Yeah. And also airplanes, when they're flying, they have to keep that into account as well.
Sure.
And pay attention to all that.
So let's bring this back to moving air masses, right? So
yeah.
we've got this air mass that has descended at 30 degrees north or south, doesn't
right.
matter, right? And once it hits the Earth, it has to go somewhere, and it's going to mm-hmm. either, some of it's going to get deflected and go north, and some of it's going to get deflected and go south back towards the equator.
Correct.
And so those are the prevailing winds that we surface dwellers experience.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this wind that is heated at the equator went up high in the upper atmosphere and is coming back down. Now, if it's going back towards the equator, let's talk about from the northern hemisphere.
Yes.
Since that's okay. where we happen to be.
Uh-huh.
Then it will tend to go to curve
to the west.
Towards the west.
And so this is exactly analogous to what you just said about firing a rocket from Oregon towards the equator, right?
Yes.
So this
Yeah, so this is the returned air, which is what we would experience here at the surface.
Uh-huh.
This return air now will seem to be deflected. You know, it was deflected in the upper atmosphere, but we don't care about that so much.
Yeah.
That's not affecting us down here.
Yeah, we don't ever experience that unless we're like in a plane.
But down here, the winds that we experience would be pushing towards the west.
Yeah. So that's why if you are situated somewhere between the equator and 30 north,
mm-hmm.
the weather comes from the east and goes to the west. The prevailing winds go east to west.
Yes.
So this is like Florida, you know, this Gulf Coast is roughly around that 30 degrees north range, mm-hmm. right? And so that's why hurricanes come across the Atlantic from east to west.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a map, they're south of 30 degrees, right? And then
right.
they slam into the east coast of Florida, or they make it up into the
And they
Gulf.
Tend to always curve and towards then the east, yeah.
Yeah, and then they sort of get to about 30 degrees, and then they start to tail off back to the east again.
Mm-hmm. And also, travelers, you know, like Christopher Columbus and people like that,
right?
They knew about, these were called the easterlies and the westerlies, that they
yeah.
knew if they were going to the Americas, they would kind of come down first and then go west.
Right.
To get those winds near the equator.
Mm-hmm.
And then on their return trip, they would actually follow the coast up of the North American coast north for a bit, and then they'd be able to cross back over.
Right. Right. So let's talk about what happens to that air masses that are moving from 30 degrees north.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be analogous to what you were talking about, firing something towards the north.
Correct.
Right. And so that's going to be deflected to the east.
Yeah.
Because the ground it's passing over is moving progressively slower relative to our projectile or our air mass that's moving.
Right.
And so for us, sitting here at 45 north, that's why our prevailing winds move from west to east.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So that's why the weather comes from where it does.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's why we actually have these different bands here as well.
Okay. So now we're getting back to Jupiter.
Yeah. So, I mean, so the bands here, like if you were to look at the composition of our atmosphere of sort of the weather pattern, you know, the cloud level,
mm-hmm.
you would say it's a lot cloudier near the equator because this is where the water is getting heated up. It's evaporating up
mm-hmm.
and it's condensing back into clouds and then basically raining back down.
Mm-hmm.
So near there, we have a composition that would, you'd say, oh, there's a lot of water vapor right there.
Okay.
But when you get up to about the 30 degrees, either the north or the south on the Earth, that's when this air is crashing back down into the Earth. This is dry air that's crashing back down. And actually, it's interesting. If you look on a map, right around the 30-degree latitude, either north or south, that's where most of the world's deserts are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this would be the southern United States. You know, the Southwest mm-hmm. has lots of deserts there.
Sahara.
The Sahara Desert. All mm-hmm. these different deserts that you can think of are right along that latitude there. And
mm-hmm.
that's because of this weather pattern that the dry air is crashing back down into the Earth right around
right.
that latitude. And so if you were to look at that from above, you'd say, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. Here near the equator, we've got this band of a lot of water vapor, but up here, it looks like a much drier band. And so in the visible spectrum, we would not see anything in that case, but there would be a difference in the atmosphere that you would detect from that.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get back to Jupiter. So Jupiter is cool because it's got all these bands to it. Jupiter is also getting heated by the sun. And so there are winds on Jupiter due to this. And so near its equator, it's getting heated up. It's pushing gases both north and south.
So you have sort of like a gaseous upwelling around the equator.
Yep.
Okay.
And then because it's spinning around, and it's actually spinning around so much faster than Earth.
Uh-huh.
So we talked about here on Earth, near the equator, things are rotating. You'd be traveling about 1,000 miles per hour.
Okay.
If you were at this atmospheric level for Jupiter, you're going like 30,000 miles per hour.
Wow. So 30 times the speed.
Yeah. Okay. So the Coriolis effect on Jupiter is much, much stronger because, like I said, I mean, it rotates every 10 hours, which is faster than Earth.
Plus, it has such a much larger diameter.
Yeah. It is so much bigger than Earth, and it has to be going much, much faster.
Okay.
So the Coriolis effect on Jupiter is much stronger than it is here. And because of that, there are many more bands on Jupiter than there are here on Earth.
Mm.
Because it's getting broken up into more of these cells here. Gases are trying to move away from the equator, and they get curved one way, and then they are forced to crash back down. So you'll have these different bands of different composition in the atmosphere.
Okay. So isn't Jupiter mostly hydrogen? Is that true?
It is mostly hydrogen, yeah.
Hydrogen and helium and...
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it also has some simple alcohols, methane, things like that.
Okay.
It's got a lot of methane. It's got some CO2. It's got some complex molecules.
Okay. And so is it just subtle differences in the blends of those different compounds that give it these kind of different shades of brown?
Yeah.
Sort of like from a light creamy color to a sort of a darker tan?
Yeah, because at these bands where they're coming up into the atmosphere, you're seeing basically some of these complex molecules will get pushed up into that. And then basically rain back down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And as they're coming down, actually, this is interesting, actually. When they're falling back down, they'll kind of ionize.
Do you get lightning?
They have lots of lightning on Jupiter.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, again, very similar to Earth, that you've got weather patterns like lightning happening on Jupiter.
And so it breaks it in. There are more. So on Earth, there are cells that go from 0 to 30, and then from 30 to 60 are the feral cells, and 60 to 90, those are the polar cells. So there are like three main cells.
Well, six. Double it. Yeah.
Right. Three main cells, I was going to say, on each side of the equator.
Oh, okay.
Smart,
yes.
Smart guy. But you said that gets broken up into more cells on Jupiter? Is that what accounts for the multiple?
Exactly.
It seems like there are more bands.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so because the Coriolis effect is stronger, there are just more bands on Jupiter.
Hmm.
And it just happens that these bands of high pressure and low pressure are all, the effects that they cause are happening in the visible spectrum. So we can actually tell the difference with it.
Okay. So let's talk about the Big Red Spot.
Oh, yes.
So that, to me, it looks like it's kind of situated where two bands brush past each other. Is that right?
Yeah. It's a giant big spot. It turns out it's basically a giant hurricane. So
how big?
I think several Earths could fit into the hurricane.
Okay.
Into the spot.
I feel like I've heard that somewhere independently, so it must be true.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it spawns off. There are several smaller hurricanes that kind of spawn off from that as well.
Oh, yeah.
And those are all like, a lot of them are about the size of Alaska.
Wow.
These tiny ones that just branch off of that. So,
how long has this red spot been around?
Centuries.
Centuries? For as long as people have been able to see it that close up?
So Galileo was the first one to use a telescope, so he was the first one to be able to see it.
Okay.
And he made reference to this red spot.
And it was there then?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's been around for about 300 years, at least.
At least.
Yeah. And these smaller ones will last for decades as well. But again, so let's bring this back to Earth just to kind of get some sense of this. That here on Earth, hurricanes and things tend to form near where these bands are meeting.
Okay.
So in the United States, it will often happen in the Caribbean area.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you've got a band is traveling southbound. And so it feels kind of a push westerly.
Uh-huh.
And you've got this band that is trying to go back up north. And so it's getting a push easterly.
Uh-huh.
And if you combine east and west going like that, you can actually get them to start swirling in a circle.
Right.
And so that's what happens. They will start swirling in a circle, and that is
a
hurricane.
And you need sort of like a little low pressure spot that they're kind of swirling around. Does that help?
It actually helps that they have warm water when they start out.
Okay.
Because that helps kind of feed into it, that you get more evaporation happening, and then that causes more things to it's a low pressure cell, and it helps kind of to make it grow and go faster and so mm-hmm. forth. And you kind of need that. You need this water source to help keep evaporating into it and adding to it and so forth to make it go stronger and grow.
Okay.
It's interesting. So on Earth, in the Northern Hemisphere, all cyclones, all hurricanes will spin counterclockwise.
Uh-huh.
So if you ever watch like the Weather Channel or anything like that, you'll see they're always spinning counterclockwise.
Right.
But if you ever watch one of them that's in the Southern Hemisphere, they're all going clockwise in that case.
Right.
It's the same physics.
Mm-hmm.
It is just reversed just because
yeah.
of some directions there. But
And also in a Northern Hemisphere, so whether we're talking about an Atlantic hurricane, that low pressure system will sort of be coming off the western coast of Africa across mm-hmm. the Atlantic, south of 30 North.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll sort of deflect off once it gets to about 30 degrees north. It'll start deflecting back to the east again.
Yeah.
All hurricane tracks do that in the Northern Hemisphere. And that's also true of Pacific Ocean hurricanes, right? Mm-hmm. So they'll go west for a while and then they'll deflect back to the east.
Yeah. So you're saying like presumably in...
Yeah, like Southeast Asia.
Southeast Asia yeah. areas. Yep.
But then if you look, as you said... As far as the rotation is reversed, but then also in the Southern Hemisphere, the hurricane will be heading west somewhere between the equator and mm-hmm. 30 south. It'll be heading west. And then once it heads south of 30 south, then it deflects back to the east.
Yeah. So the directions are both the same. They're both heading west and then to the east.
Yeah. Yeah.
But because of also the directions, when we call it clockwise or counterclockwise, we're standing above it, basically.
Right.
It just looks backwards, but
yeah,
it's the same mechanisms
yeah.
churning that around.
Yeah,
but also okay. you'll notice that when a hurricane gets over land, that's when it kind of dies off.
Right, it runs out of its fuel source. Right.
Right. It doesn't. It doesn't have any more of the water to feed it anymore, and the air is running across the land, and there's more friction involved and stuff like that. So it kind of kills yeah. it off pretty quickly there.
Okay.
Whereas on Jupiter, it keeps its fuel source. And so that's why like this giant hurricane is able to keep going on for a long time.
What makes it red?
It's just the composition of the gases around there.
Huh.
So remember, we said that a low pressure cell has a slightly different color than a higher pressure. And so a hurricane like that is going to have all this low pressure. Only certain molecules will really be obvious to us because other ones will have evaporated or gotten pushed around in a different way.
Okay. I guess I'm just wondering like... specifically what it is. Can I ask about when we're talking about Earth, we're talking about air patterns or air mass movements
mm-hmm.
with respect to the solid surface of the planet.
Right. Yep.
Okay. And when we say that if you were above the North Pole, Earth would be rotating in a counterclockwise direction.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so is the same true of Jupiter? If you were above Jupiter's North Pole, would it be rotating in a counterclockwise direction as well?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, there are only two exceptions, except for Uranus and Venus, the two us's. every planet in the solar system is actually rotating in the exact same direction.
Okay.
At different rates, different speeds, but.
Okay. And what is the, I guess, solid substance or is there one that is comparable to the land surface of Earth that these atmospheric masses are moving with respect to? Is there anything comparable to that on Jupiter? Like if you were to fall far enough into Jupiter, would you eventually hit something solid?
So that's, I would not be surprised. So, I mean, there's no way for us to know that.
Okay.
Right? I mean, the way we know the mass of Jupiter... The way we know the mass of anything is looking at how things orbit around
uh-huh.
that object. And so it's actually interesting. Like, we didn't know the mass of Mercury until we sent probes to orbit around it and stuff.
Hmm.
But with Jupiter, for instance, we knew that because it's got a lot of moons. Most of the planets have a bunch of moons around them, so we could observe those. Well, it's interesting. Like, Pluto, the reason it was originally called a planet was because they saw it. It took them about 50 years to find a moon orbiting around Pluto.
Hmm.
And once they did that, they're like, oh, that's really small. It's not really a planet. And so we know how much mass is in Jupiter.
Okay.
And so from that, you can kind of estimate, like, you can make models about, like, okay, well, if it's just all hydrogen and these gaseous molecules, what would it look like and so forth?
Uh-huh.
One could imagine that there could be a core of something just really solid.
Really dense.
Yeah, of like rocks or heavy metals or something like that. But generally, people don't talk about that. However, if you were falling in, like, so we've actually done this experiment. We actually sent Cassini, I think was the name of the probe. I think it was the Galileo satellite, and it dropped Cassini into the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So it was this instrument that actually had a parachute, and it just was dropped in order to measure what the composition was as it was falling down.
Uh-huh.
And eventually the temperature got hotter and hotter and hotter. Eventually this probe just melted, basically, because the pressure just got so high and the temperature got so high that it just melted it and crushed it all at the same time.
Okay.
But assuming that you could make it all the way down, the temperature and the pressure would just increase as you're falling and falling and falling, and would get really, really hard to do anything. And in fact, we do know, for instance, that Jupiter has some sort of a metallic core based on it. It has a strong magnetic field, and I won't go through all this stuff, but we do know that Jupiter has a metallic core. And it's assumed that that's all hydrogen, because if you have hydrogen gas and you compress it hard enough, it will actually act like a metal. But maybe there's some other junk mixed in there as well. Yeah.
One thing as a biologist that I like to think about Jupiter mm-hmm. is how it being out there has affected life on Earth.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Which I don't know if people really think about that too much, but its big gravitational field had to have absorbed a lot of asteroids and comets and other things moving through the solar system that probably prevented at least some major strikes on Earth.
Hmm.
You think?
Possibly. It may have also deflected things in such a way that it hit us that would not have otherwise hit us.
But could it not have like sucked in a lot of cosmic stuff that would have otherwise continued on to the inner solar system? But yeah, I take your point. Like once Jupiter, you know, goes past an asteroid in a certain way and kind of like shoves it out of its stable orbit,
right,
sends it hurtling towards the inner solar system. So maybe it does a little bit of both.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, my picture of the early solar system was that, so before the sun really became a star,
uh-huh.
things were just kind of falling in towards it. And then once it started fusion, the sun started pushing things back out.
Right.
It created a lot of heat, and it also created a lot of subatomic particles that together those make up something called the solar wind.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped push a lot of things outward. So for instance, like I like to imagine that Mercury maybe had some sort of an atmosphere early on.
Hmm.
And then once the sun started going, then it just baked off all the gases and stripped it of a atmosphere entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are a little bit farther out, but still probably with the temperature, I like to imagine that maybe the Earth had a lot of hydrogen at one time. And we still do have quite a bit because it's locked up in other molecules and stuff like that. But I'm saying like hydrogen gas.
Uh-huh.
But with the solar wind and with just the size that we are, we weren't able to hold on to it.
Right.
We're too hot and too small to actually keep all those gases.
But Jupiter, on the other hand.
Jupiter, though, was far enough out that it could continue to hold on to what it had. And if it was sweeping through and it was able to grab more along the way.
Yeah, and it's so massive that that hydrogen can't escape.
Correct, yeah.
Is that, okay.
And I would actually say that in that way, it affected the other gas giants quite a bit. I'm sure that it sucked up gases before the others could vacuum them up.
Huh.
So it could be that that's why Jupiter is the biggest planet, because it kind of starved the other ones out a little bit.
Huh, okay. Do you think that its position as the innermost of the gas giants gave it kind of an advantage in that regard?
Yeah, because it's far enough away. So there's sort of a threshold of where you have to be far enough away from the sun to protect it from the solar wind enough,
uh-huh.
where it's weak enough that you can still kind of grow. But still being the closest one in, it was able to, it got first dibs at.
Right.
Yeah. So Jupiter, if you get a chance.
Definitely.
Yeah, find some nice person with a telescope
and make friends with a physicist
and see if they'll take you out into an empty field some night. Now that you know more about the atmosphere and why those bands are there,
yeah,
you should definitely make it a point to set up a telescope sometime and
go to your local observatory.
There you go.
Yes.
This episode was recorded in the KSLC studios on the beautiful campus of Linfield College. Rody Ortega wrote our theme music. If you like this episode or any like it, you should subscribe to the podcast. While there, you should leave a comment and a rating, and that will help other people find our podcast. If you have an idea for a show, either you have just a little question you want us to answer or maybe a topic that you think would deserve a show all to itself, email us at crisscrossingsci@gmail.com. All one word, all lowercase. Until next time, thanks for listening. I do say this when I'm like taking people out with the telescopes, you know, a class or whatever. I will talk about how the brightest objects in the sky are the planets, right? Because they are, all they're doing is reflecting sunlight, but they're so close that they're brighter than the stars are. And so it's kind of funny to think about that. Like when you're a little kid and you say like starlight, star bright, first star I see tonight, you know, get this wish that I'm granting on the first star that I see.
Right.
And most people are probably then wishing on a planet.
It's probably Venus.
And it's well documented that planets do not have wish-granting capabilities.
Well documented. Yeah, indeed.
And so yeah. I always made this joke like, that's why you're not a fairy princess right now.
Yeah, that's why you had to go to college.